Welcome to the AI and Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, the show where we spotlight the innovators and leaders who are transforming the future using the power of data and AI. I'm your host, Dean Gaeta, author, podcaster, and founder and CEO of Infogistics and Slingshot. We're living in an exciting era, a time where builders, leaders, and entrepreneurs are using data and AI to fuel unprecedented growth, create groundbreaking products, and drive meaningful transformations in their industry. If you're ready to learn from some of the brightest minds and uncover actionable insight to take your business to the next level, you're in the right place. And if you have a story to share, stick around until the end of the show. We'll tell you how you can become our next guest and inspire leaders around the globe. Welcome to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. Let's dive in. Okay, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm very excited to have Kubeer Jain today. He's worked at a number of really interesting companies, Asana, currently at Headspace, which, by the way, I'm a customer. You may not know that. I love the product. Totally believe in meditation, but we'll talk about that. And you're a data scientist and a growth engineer and engagement and welcome to the show. But maybe go ahead and introduce yourself.
Yeah, thank you, Dean. So as Dean mentioned, my career has really been about helping organizations use data to make smarter, faster decisions. So over the last decade, I have worked across analytics, product strategy, growth at companies like Optimizely, DocuSign, Asana, and most recently at Headspace. So at Headspace, I'm just focused on driving our users getting more engaged to app. And then I partner closely with executive stakeholders to define like key metrics, size the business impact, and lead some of the experimentation initiatives. And that means not just analyzing data, but also embedding insights into how we shape the product and how we measure success. And what ties my journey together is a passion for using analytics to solve meaningful problems, whether it's improving product adoption, boosting retention, or in Headspace case, helping people live healthier and more mindful lives. So I'm just motivated by the opportunity to be here and talk about my experience, history, and how my career has helped me drive measurable results through innovation, data-driven decision-making, and showcase like the business value of the data. Yeah, that's a bit about me.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, I love Headspace, by the way. You didn't ask me to say that, but I've been a long-time subscriber. So maybe let's start off with AI in product management. What's working, what's not working? What can you share from your point of view?
Yeah, so we all know that AI has been like a game changer in shifting us from like reactive to be like more proactive decision making. So for example, at Headspace, we did use like those LLMs and came up with our mental health companion, which is called Ebb, that can help member actually direct in the right direction depending on the conversation that the user is having with it. And that level of personalization is actually what drives like deeper engagement and better outcomes. And this is just like with regards to product itself, but more broadly in my analytics workflow, instead of spending a lot of time on building models, now we can focus on interpreting insights and then also talk about like how the predictive models can help us identify members who are at risk of disengaging and try to intervene before they drop off. So yeah, what excites me is that AI helps us scale and we can apply the same level of care and personalization to millions of members that you could previously do only like a handful of them.
And like, I'm curious, so like everyone instruments their app, so you get a lot of telemetry data, but then what's all this data and signals, how do you tie like telemetry data in the app to like signals of engagement or tying it back to the ICP or like, how do you glean insight off of just signals of what people do in the app?
Yeah, great question. So we definitely use analytics tool, which is like called Amplitude, which basically captures all the activity on like how the user is interacting with our app. So every time you go from one place to another in the app, the event gets fired and that events get captured in that tool. So what we do then is basically just look at that event. Let's say if it's like you start an app, right? So we then just look at, okay, how many users have been starting app in last 30 days, 90 days, or past 1 year, right? So this is like very basic level, but like more deeper, you can just look at how many active users we have daily, weekly, things like that. And active here meaning if a user is engaging with our app, right? So that's how we go about it on like gleaning insights.
And how do you like get insights into, okay, so your marketing team is driving people into the app and maybe they have certain attributes about them coming into the app, so maybe you have some data on that. But then how do you know that this person's going to activate, this person's going to retain, or what are some techniques that you guys use to know that and then even keep them coming back? What can you share there?
So we are currently working on just like proactively identifying how can we know in advance that the user is going to come back. But for now, what I'm focused on is like, how do I get users back into the app? So that entails like multiple things, like our user experience, right? So initially you had an older version of the app, you would see a different experience versus now when we roll out different changes to the app, we make it more evident that, okay, this is other places you can go or access content within the app. And then we make some of the things easier to navigate in terms of, okay, if you recently played a specific content, you would be able to see now that on a home screen, and you can also like favorite our content so that you can access it again and again. So little tweaks here and there is that how we try to make sure that the user engage with us every time. And so that's one part. And the other part from like marketing perspective is just like sending those nudges on the app when you have like notifications on. So, hey, you set up a reminder. Did you do your meditation today? So it just nudges you every single time if you have that enabled on your app, right? So that's how we make sure that user keeps engaging with our app.
Yeah, it's like I was like, I think people fall in and out of meditation. I was doing really well meditating, and then you get distracted. And I don't know if I've gotten the nudging notifications yet, so I might have that turned off, but I do need to get nudged, so that's interesting.
And the biggest thing for, as you talked about, meditation is something that it's driven by motivations. So no matter how much notification I'm going to send you, if you are not motivated with doing it yourself, even would I send you like 100 notification every single day, then you'll be pissed off. Damn, I don't want to do it. So it's mostly like self-driven, and that's what drives this space. And that's why it's so interesting in terms of it's driven by motivation. Although there are like areas like you can use like AI and all those things that I talked about, but it's mostly like it has to come from yourself that, okay, you want to take care of your mental health, and that's the starting point.
Yeah, no doubt. And yeah, you try to form the habits, but then you fall out of your habits, and then you need to get reminded to get back into those good habits of meditation. Because yeah, it's mental health, but for me, it's like way more than mental health. It hits you at first, you don't see the experience, and then if you do it for a good 3, 4 weeks, then all of a sudden you start feeling better. You see the experience. Anyways, I'm a big believer in it, but I've got to get back talking to you today. I will be tomorrow morning in my Headspace app because I fell out of it a little bit. So you've been part of like software and AI or data driven insights and for a while now. Like what's the state of the art? Like what's new that you've learned or techniques that you learned that you could share with some of our viewers, which are a lot of tech and entrepreneurs.
So as you all know, like the technology has shifted so rapidly in last 2, 3 years, right? So back at Asana, when I started, I was just focused on, okay, how can we make sure that the customer who use Asana, how can we retain it? So that entails working more on B2B sides of things, of looking at like how much customer is paying and like looking at their adoption of the product in terms of like how they're using Asana as a workflow, work management tool in a day-to-day. And coming to Headspace is like doing similar thing, but more on consumer focused. So in terms of like technology or things that I've learned is I think every single day you try to learn something new, but the next day it gets outdated. So I think for me personally, like I have been trying to use more AI tools like Perplexity, ChatGPT in my day-to-day work, which can make my life simpler in terms of debugging a code, or it could just be like making sure there's no grammatical mistakes in the summary that I sent out to my stakeholders. So all those small things that has really saved up some amount of time. I do get this question, like, is AI going to replace jobs? I'm like, it's very hard to say no and see that in a crystal ball. But I think like soft skills is going to be sticking around for sure. So your communication, your decision making, your strategic thinking is something that's more valuable than your tech skills. You can learn tech skills with all these GPT tools, and like you actually don't know about it, but you can just prompt it and you can just get the code. So that's something that keeps evolving. But I think soft skills are here to stay, regardless of AI take our job or not.
Yeah, and I'm personally a big believer in the overhyping of AI taking jobs. Yeah, certain jobs, but if you really think about your job, Kuber, do you think AI is going to take your job, or are you just using AI to perform better, faster? I would think it'd be the latter, but what's your point of view? Do you think that AI is going to take your job?
So not in the near term, because we have been seeing, as I mentioned, right, to my previous point, that some of the skills like communication, strategic thinking, decision making, I think those have to be driven by human, right? Even though you can take the output from an AI model, but in the end, you have to translate to make sure your stakeholders understand that. So I don't think in the near term it would, but as like those models evolve, there might be. But again, we are not like full predictors, so anything can happen. We have been talking about AI for a really long time now, right? It came in different flavor and went started with like self-driving cars, Netflix recommendations, and AI is just like more function of, we used to have like machine learning way back in 2002, but it was not hyped. So AI is just like application of that. So we are still there, we're still doing our job, so we'll see what time is still.
Now, what projects have you, without sharing confidential information, like what's really excited you about leveraging data and insights and helping drive retention in an app? What, any things you could share with the audience around that?
Yeah. So I think personally for me, I've learned that analytics is, it's not just about numbers, it's mostly about the questions you ask, right? So you can have the most sophisticated models, but if you're not asking the right questions, you'll miss the real opportunities. So you would be surprised like how small or insight-driven changes often can have a biggest impact, right? So Headspace, something as simple as if you're able to nudge users to be used to use the app twice, or use the app weekly twice, that can have a major impact on their long-term retention. So a small thing like that, it teaches me that data doesn't just inform a big strategic bets, but it can also unlock everyday improvements that can compound over time. The other lesson that I've learned is the importance of making like data accessible and actionable across the organization, right? So it's about building trust with stakeholders, simplifying metrics with the teams that you work with, so that they can really understand that, and relentlessly focusing on the business impact. So combination of all these things plus AI, I think, is what make like my life successful, in terms of which also requires some like kind of empathy and clarity from colleagues who may be new to all these technologies.
Yeah. And how do you create trust in the data or trust with the stakeholders and your insights? And how do you do that?
Yeah, I think trust is like, it's not just specific to my job, but I think wherever you work, I think trust is very critical, right? So I think it starts with just like having a clear communication, right? Because being in this data space, I've worked with different org that has different type of like architect data infrastructure set up, right? Some were matured, some were not matured to that scale where insights were like easily generatable, right? No matter what state of data your company is in, like in terms of data maturity, I think communication is key. And then making sure that even though if you're not able to deliver a specific insight or a project, making your stakeholder understand, okay, why behind it, like why were you not able to deliver it, and making sure that they have visibility into, okay, if not today, can I do it in like next 30 days or 60 days? So having that open communication is a key to like building trust. And then comes your like result part, right? So the other part is, let's say your organization like data mature, whatever you share with your stakeholders in terms of like insights and all the analysis that you do, making sure that you QA your work and it's like accurate so that exact stakeholders can take that insights and convert those into like business outcomes. So just those two things.
Yeah, that's good. And do you guys do any, or have you done any reinforcement learning? Do you build your own models and then, or build on top of models and give it some more capability through reinforcement learning, or?
So not in the current state. Also, it's just been a year for me, so I'm still like trying to get hang of things. But currently we are not using like reinforcement learning, but we are building some kind of models to see like who are the users who are like power users of our app, right? Who engage with our app daily versus someone who is like more like a casual user, right? So we are trying to build a model to be able to identify and group those users so that we can leverage that insights to be more targeted in our approach on how we want to make sure that those users have what they need in terms of
And
input.
so, how are you doing that? How are you building a model to understand that?
It's typical ML models, like regression models, just to understand, like looking at how users engage with our app in terms of. So when I say engage, there are like different things, right? Like we have so many content in our app. It's like meditation, you have Sleepcast, you have breathing exercises, right? And we have podcasts too. Then you have yoga, all those things, right? So there are so many things. So we just look at like overall how a user interact with different things and then use that as an input to be able to feed that into our ML model and see, okay, do the users come back like every day and then just classify them based on their state.
So you're probably doing some correlation, like people that are using this part of the app, they come back more frequently. People that use this part of the app, not as frequent. And then how do you glean insight from that? So an exec or a product owner would be like, okay, we want them to come back more. But then do you just use kind of growth hacking and experimentation to bring them back? Or are there data techniques to give a little bit better insight to what should you do to bring them back more?
Great question. We do run like a lot of experiments here in terms of understanding what the user experiences, and we also have collect like qualitative feedback to our NPS. So that's like a combination of those two that we use to be able to come up with those experiments. So some of the experiments that we run is just around, okay, with the technology involved, we also have to update our app, right? Making sure that things that have been recently used are e easily accessible on the homepage. And also that the mental health companion that I talked about earlier, right, making it more evident on the home screen so that people are more curious and there's excitement for like users to be able to interact with that. And sometimes you don't have anyone to talk to so that you can interact with it. And based on your conversation, that redirects you or recommends you like a specific content type. So
Yeah,
small things that like that we actually try to do to make it more engaging.
is that working? Is that
We have
a
seen a lot of
successful
traction.
experiment?
Positive traction in terms of the mental health companion thing that I was talking about. And then experimentation is always iterative. So we learn, we relearn because some of the experiment might not give us results what we want. So it's always just like a constant feedback loop that we work on and just use that as an input to make sure what works best for the users in terms of user experience, in terms of accessing content and making sure they're staying active in the app.
Are you a part of the team that, like, when you do the experiment, what data do you want to collect? And then what do you want to learn? And what is that, like, part of what, how you operate?
So I very closely collaborate with product managers. So every time they come up with product, okay, this is the experiment that we want to run. So for me, it becomes more of, okay, great that we want to run this experiment. Now it's about like, how can we make sure that experiment is success or not, right? So then my work is to just to come up with a success metric to be able to measure the outcome of that experiment. And once I have defined on the metric, I just do some stat thing to compute the power analysis and making sure like what our baseline was, and then give PMs visibility, okay, this is how long you should run your experiment for. And once that experiment is run for that amount of time until it has reached your enough power, meaning enough sample in your both the groups, that's when I do a readout of them. Okay, this is our primary metric. And was there any significant lift? And whether that lift was like a statistical meaningful or not. So we just do some statistical analysis to be able to create like a readout and then communicate that to.
And is there a magic number? I think it's like 200. If you get 200, like data sets or data points that's statistically significant, or is there a magic number in there, or?
No, it's a function of multiple things. So, like standard, like we use, again, it's very technical as well, but we use like alpha to be 5%, meaning like if your result, output result is reached 5%, or there's only 5% chance that the result that you got is by chance. It's not because of the experience that you make. So we have that 5% threshold that we basically use to compute, okay, whether that was stat sig or not. So it's pretty standard, which is basically telling you that 5%, there's a 5% chance that whatever result you are seeing is just by randomization, right? So we use that as a very standard. And then there are other parameters like whether your metric is like a proportion metric or a mean metric, meaning is it like an absolute or a percentage of something. And then is it about like what lift you want to see? So now if you tell me I'm running this experiment as a PM, are you expecting to see 1% lift, 2% lift, 3% lift, all that, right? It's a function of what lift you want to see, how much, what percentage of that could be by chance, and then what the sample size like of your, what's the sample size of where your traffic would be. So if your traffic on home screen is 100K, so based on those, all those parameters, I'll do the power analysis and then come up with that number.
Okay, good. And then, so you worked at some pretty good software companies, DocuSign, Asana, Headspace, Optimizely. What have you seen that works consistently? Have you like across all those for to improve retention? Have you, is there any like some learnings that you've had working at all these different companies that help better increase retention or increase engagement? Is there any thing that you could share that's, yeah, that's worked at all companies.
Yeah, so again, like my core focus on engagement and retention came right when I started at Asana. So it's like last 5 years, but prior to that, I was more focused on just doing analytics in terms of BI reporting, making sure that we have right data, right metrics to be able to track and just build dashboards. So talking specifically about like engagement and retention, again, I feel like retention is a function of engagement and activation, right? Retention is always the output. You cannot say, I want to improve retention, right? That's not true. If you need to improve retention, you need to improve your engagement, user engagement with the app, and you need to make sure the users are activated in your app, right? Because so the equation would be like retention equal to engagement plus activation. Retention is always the output. It's
Right.
never the input. So that's one thing that I've learned. And it is similar to what we did at Asana too, but it's more B2B versus D2C here. And there are like certain strategies, right? Like engagement, again, it depends on what ICP you are targeting, right? I think with D2C, it's like more broader and you have like more data versus B2B, you are just limited to like enterprise, B2B, SMB, or very small businesses, right? I think some things is something that I've learned is like, for B2B, I think it's more, you can segment the data easily in terms of either like the region or what size of the company is, and then glean some really good insights and like how long a customer has been with you, like how long is the tenure of their customers. For B2C, you have like much more data to play with, right? As I mentioned, like the amount of cut you can do is so many. It could be like based on your, how power is the user, a power user, if it's like a casual user. It can be based on geography. It can be based on. So we also offer Headspace as a benefit for some employers. So we also in like B2B, but for those B2B users, because they're not paying out of pocket, they're not as engaging as D2C, right? If something gives you something for free, you will be like, I don't want to use it. So that's
Yeah.
something that we have seen in terms of like how the behaviors are different for like D2C versus B2B. This is more specific to like engagement and retention. But I can talk about some of the lessons across I've learned in the intersection of like data and AI. It's just anchoring everything in like business outcomes. So data and AI are powerful, true, but if they are not tied to a clear outcome like retention, growth, or customer satisfaction, they just become like a data science project. Nothing. It's just like garbage in, garbage out. And
Yeah.
the thing, second thing is just you need to think about how can you invest in people and not just technology. Because I think the best analytic strategies succeed because leaders actually invest in training, storytelling, and collaboration across teams. And the last part is just leading with empathy. So data tells you like, okay, what is happening, but it doesn't tell you like why. So great leaders actually combine their analytical rigor with empathy for customers and employees. And that balance actually makes your strategies more human and ultimately like more effective. So at the end of the day, it's just about creating clarity, building trust, and empowering people to act on insights with confidence.
Yeah, that's good. That's always a question. The data always does tell you what, but then it's why. And like any advice on how you can interpret the why?
Yeah, I think so. Again, data is like this analytics is an industry where you just look at more quantitative data, right? But I think you'll have like more insights if you just also look at qualitative data. So that entails like capturing your CSAT, NPS scores, and going through the comments that customer has to respond with. Okay, I'm finding your user experience shitty. Can you just help? Like all those things, right? That would be like icing on the cake, because you already have a cake in terms of your quantitative data, and your icing becomes your qualitative data. So that gives you help understand like the why behind. And then there are certain things around like seasonality, your mix shift, because your percentage of customers or revenue from a certain segment like enterprise, SMB, PSB shift over time. Similar thing happens might with region two. You might be more focused on North America, but 5 years you'll be more focused on EMEA. So that would also change your like the overall base, and then that helps you give more insights on like why.
Yeah, that's good. Now, is there a question that I didn't ask that you wish I would ask that you want to share with the audience?
No, I think you pretty much asked everything that I would be interested to talk about. Yeah, I hope the audience find this helpful and learn from it.
Yeah, I think they will. And if people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that, Cooper?
Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn, so you can just find me Kuber Jain and Headspace, so you can find me there. But I also do pro bono free coaching for like new career professionals on
Oh, nice.
topbrain.io/KuberJain. So there's also that link on my LinkedIn profile that if someone want to like just chat about anything related to data, AI, career, I'm always in too.
Oh, that's nice, Cooper. That's nice that you do that. Good job. Good job mentoring people and helping people. Thank you for being on the show. I think people will get a lot of good insight into some of the work that you've done and what you shared here on the show. So thank you. Hey, it's Dean Guida here. Thank you so much for tuning in to the AI Data Driven Leadership Podcast, where we showcase the visionaries who are shaping the future with data and AI. If you're a successful leader, entrepreneur, or business professional and want to share your story on this program, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us at podcast.slingshotapp.io to apply. Got something value out of this interview? Share the love. Take a quick screenshot. Post it to your favorite social platform or text it to a friend. Don't forget to tag the show and use the hashtag AI Data Driven Leadership. I love seeing your posts and suggestions for future guests. And if you know someone who would make a great guest, let them know about the show. We're dropping new episodes regularly, so don't miss out. Hit subscribe wherever you listen. And if you enjoyed this episode, a quick thumbs up, rating, or review would mean the world to me and my team. Want to stay connected? Visit our website at podcast.slingshotapp.io or find me on LinkedIn at Dean Guida and Instagram at DeanGuida89. Thanks again for listening to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. We'll see you next time.